Welcome to the EDUCAUSE Review Online Podcast. I'm Jerry Bain. On this podcast, we feature a conversation with Dale Askey. Askey is the Associate University Librarian for Library and Learning Technologies at McMaster University. He also serves as Administrative Director of the Lewis and Ruth Sherman Center for Digital Scholarship. I started our conversation by asking for his definition of the term digital scholarship.
There are a couple definitions that are sort of evolving, and it's really fun to kind of watch the evolution. I think that one of the ones that's coming out in libraries nowadays tends to wrap what we used to call scholarly communication inside something called a digital scholarship envelope, where we're lumping into their journal publishing, advocacy for open access, doing digitization, digital collections, things like that, all under this big tent called digital scholarship. I think a while back I would have defined it simply as a broader way of saying digital humanities, but I think I've been disabused of that in recent times, in that digital humanities has really managed to establish itself as a specific set of methodologies and a way of doing things and a community and a set of practices. And digital scholarship is not just replacing the word humanities with scholarship and saying, oh, now it applies to everybody. Digital humanities, as people in the DH world will tell you, can apply to any discipline. It's not necessarily about the humanities per se as much as a type of inquiry and a set of methodologies. So I guess that means I don't have a super strong definition for myself. What I have is a pretty broad awareness that there are competing definitions, and that depending on the constituency with whom you're speaking, you need to define the term and be careful about how you use it so that people don't misunderstand what you're talking about. And this is really acutely important for me because the place where I sit is the Sherman Center for Digital Scholarship. And so you kind of put that out there on your flag and people expect certain things. And so people come to us looking sort of for what I would call the more servicey things that would be sort of the library publishing activities. And while we do some of that, that's not really where our emphasis is. So it's a bit of a negotiation.
So people are using digital tools all the time in pursuit of scholarship. Does that make it digital scholarship under your definition?
Right. That's I think one of the crux. That's the core of maybe the issues one has around these definitions, is that some people on a campus assume if they're doing something with a computer, then that's digital scholarship, and therefore we support it. So it becomes very practical in terms of when people come knocking. People have been using computers for a long time, and we didn't call it digital scholarship. And so I definitely see a definition, a splitting of those two things. So in terms of parsing it out, what I try to tell people is that using sort of a lowercase definition of digital scholarship means that you're doing something where computing technology has enabled doing something in a new way, not just made what you were doing slightly more efficient. The example being that you could write a manuscript freehand on a piece of paper and submit it and have it published as a book 40 years ago. 20 years ago, you could do it on a really crappy PC or on some sort of word processor, and now you can do it with your eyes closed using any computer. But really, it hasn't changed fundamentally the creation of a manuscript, as opposed to, okay, 20 years ago, you weren't able to take, you know, a text corpus of 14 million pages and run an algorithm against it and do some intelligent text mining, which is nowadays fairly simple to do. And that is much more what I consider digital scholarship, not just using digital tools, but actually doing scholarship inside technology, using technology.
What do you think are the three biggest challenges currently facing digital scholarship?
So one of them is building, I would say, the community, helping to build the community. And so depending on the campus people are on, there are people who get all of this and are already there, and there are people who are dabbling in it, and there are people who are resistant to it, who just think that it's all just kind of sexifying things that have been around for a long time and that are just, that it's gimmicks to try to save fields. So we're trying to create literally, here at McMaster, a cohort of faculty who help self-define as digital humanists or digital scholars. I don't really care which they want to use, although I think digital humanist will win out. And therefore, do their research in that mode, teach their students how to move into that kind of research mode, and imbue everything they do with these methodologies, with these tools, with these ways of practice. That's one. Number two is sidestepping false expectations. And I think this sort of gets to the first. There are people that think, because what they're doing involves technology, that they have things that they want to essentially outsource, especially out of their grant-funded projects, where, our grant needs a website, or our grant needs a database, or our project needs a database, and they just want to go find somebody on campus who they think will do these things for them as a service agency. And they understand that as being digital scholarship. And it's like, no, it's really much more collaborative than that. If you want us to work with you on your grant project, then include us in the grant substantively, not just as a tertiary service provider. A third one might be broadly put, pulling everything together that operates in this arena under a cohesive whole. So we support graduate students here. We have a maker space. We develop curriculum for undergraduates. We do advocacy with faculty. We are engaged in data management on campus. Trying to juggle all of these pieces while not going insane, not spending too much money, and making it clear to people what you do and what you don't do is a major challenge. And you have to this is evolving rapidly. And so you have to have an open mind. You can't just say, we don't do data, or a makerspace, that's just a playground. We don't do that. You kind of have to try it out, see if anyone buys in, and if they do, then you kind of put more resources behind it. So you've got to be really flexible.
So how important is the role of curation in all of this?
I think that's a strength of libraries, is sort of taking that long view and saying, these things need to stick around. It's cool that they're being looked at now, but what about in 20 years, 50 years? So I think the short answer is yes, absolutely. It's very central to it. And one of the background, I was at DH last summer in Lincoln, Nebraska at the big conference. And what occurred to me was I was seeing, a fascinating array of projects and hearing about things that have been done in previous years. And it occurred to me that a good research project would be to sort of do very detailed forensic work to see how many of these projects that have been talked about over the course of DH, the papers, the presentations, how many of them can you actually locate the objects or the vestiges? But I think that's a very key piece, because it's in the nature of researchers to care about what they're doing at the moment or what comes next. It's not necessarily going to add value to their careers if they're good curators and they can say, that's not sexy at all. And it's been shown time and time and time and time again that humans are bad by nature, kind of bad data managers. So I think that's an area where we play a big role. And when we work with people, we kind of make that very clear. We just tell them, give us anything and we'll archive it. We don't care if it's a code snippet, visual objects, just give it to us. We'll take care of it. And we model that by doing it with our own work. And so we generate a lot of code and a lot of documentation around, for example, our makerspace. And no matter how trivial we deem it, we're trying to become very vigilant about putting it on GitHub to make it accessible, to make it versionable, to make it forkable. And then that sort of implies a certain type of curation for a certain type of object.
Dale Askey is Associate University Librarian for Library and Learning Technologies at McMaster University. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. Thanks for listening.